billions, Stenton amended. Right, May said. Our interfaces are infinitely easier to use than, say, the patchwork of DMV sites around the country. What if you could renew your license through us? What if every government service could be facilitated through our network? People would leap at the chance. Instead of visiting 100 different sites for 100 different government services, it could all be done through the Circle. Annie opened her mouth again. May knew it was a mistake. But why wouldn't the government, Annie asked, just build a similar wraparound service? Why do they need us? May couldn't decide if she was asking this rhetorically or if she truly felt this was a valid point. In any case, much of the room was now snickering. The government building a system from scratch to rival the Circle? May looked to Bailey and to Stenton. Stenton smiled, raised his chin, and decided to take this one himself. Well, Annie, a government project to build a similar platform from the ground up would be ludicrous and costly, and, well, impossible. We already have the infrastructure and 83% of the electorate. Does that make sense to you? Annie nodded, her eyes showing fear and regret and maybe even some quickly fading defiance. Stenton's tone was dismissive, and May hoped he would soften when he continued. Now more than ever, he said, but now more condescending than before. Washington is trying to save money and is disinclined to build vast new bureaucracies from scratch. Right now, it costs the government about $10 to facilitate every vote. 200 million people vote, and it costs the feds $20 billion to run the presidential election every 4 years. Just to process the votes for that one election, that one day. You factor in every state and local election, we're talking hundreds of billions every year in unnecessary costs associated with simple vote processing. I mean, they're still doing it on paper in some states. If we provide these services for free, we're saving the government billions of dollars. And more importantly, the results would be known simultaneously. Do you see the truth in that? Annie nodded grimly, and Stenton looked to her as if assessing her anew. He turned to May, urging her to continue. And if it's mandatory to have a TrueU account to pay taxes or receive any government service, she said, then we're very close to having 100% of the citizenry, and then we can take the temperature of everyone at any time. A small town wants everyone to vote on a local ordinance. TrueU knows everyone's address, so only residents of that town can vote. And when they do, the results are known in minutes. A state wants to see how everyone feels about a new tax. Same thing. Instant and clear and verifiable data. It would eliminate the guesswork, Stenton said, now standing at the head of the table. Eliminate lobbyists. Eliminate polls. It might even eliminate Congress. If we can know the will of the people at any time, without filter, without misinterpretation or bastardization, wouldn't it eliminate much of Washington? The night was cold and the winds were lacerating, but May didn't notice. Everything felt good, clean, and right. To have the validation of the wise men, to have perhaps pivoted the entire company in a new direction, to have perhaps, ensured a new level of participatory democracy? Could it be that the Circle, with her new idea, might really perfect democracy? Could she have conceived the solution to a 1,000-year-old problem? There had been some concern just after the meeting about a private company taking over a very public act, like voting. But the logic of it, the savings inherent, was winning the day. What if the schools had $200 billion? What if the healthcare system had $200 billion? Any number of the country's ills would be addressed or solved with that kind of savings. Savings not just every 4 years, but some semblance of them every year. To eliminate all costly elections replaced by instantaneous ones, all of them nearly cost-free? This was the promise of the Circle. This was the unique position of the Circle. This is what people were zinging. She read the zings as she rode with Francis in a train under the bay, the two of them grinning out of their minds. They were being recognized. People were stepping in front of May to get onto her video feed, and she didn't care. Hardly noticed, because the news coming through her right bracelet was too good to take her eyes off. She checked her left arm briefly. Her pulse was elevated, her heart rate at 130, but she was loving it. When they arrived downtown, they took the stairs three at a time and arrived above ground, suddenly lit in gold on Market Street, the Bay Bridge blinking beyond.
Holy shit, it's May!
Who had said that? May found, hurrying toward them, a teenaged pair, hoodies and headphones.
Rock on, May, the other one said, their eyes approving, starstruck, before the two of them, clearly not wanting to seem stalky, hurried down the stairs.
That was fun,
Francis said, watching them descend. May walked toward the water. She thought of Mercer and saw him as a shadow, quickly disappearing. She hadn't heard from him, or Annie, since the talk, and she didn't care. Her parents hadn't said a word and might not have seen her performance, and she found herself unconcerned. She cared only about this moment, this night, the sky clear and starless.
I can't believe how poised you were,
Francis said, and he kissed her, a dry, professional kiss on the lips.
Was I okay?
She asked, knowing how ridiculous it sounded, this kind of doubt in the wake of such an obvious success, but wanting once more to hear that she had done a good job.
You were perfect, he said. A 100.
Quickly, as they walked toward the water, she scrolled through the most popular recent comments. There seemed to be one particular zing with heat, something about how all this could or would lead to totalitarianism. Her stomach sank.
Come on, you can't listen to a lunatic like that,
Francis said.
What does she know? Some crank somewhere with a tinfoil hat?
May smiled, not knowing what the tinfoil hat reference meant, but knowing she'd heard her father say it, and it made her smile to think of him saying it.
Let's get a libation,
Francis said, and they decided on a glittering brewery on the water fronted by a wide outdoor patio. Even as they approached, May saw recognition in the eyes of the array of pretty young people drinking outdoors.
It's May, one said.
A young man, seeming too young to be drinking at all, aimed his face at May's camera.
Hey, Mom, I'm home studying.
A woman of about 30, who may or may not have been with the too young man, said, walking out of view,
Hey, honey, I'm at a book club with the ladies. Say hi to the kids.
The night was dizzy and bright and went too fast. May barely moved at the Bayside bar. She was surrounded. She was handed drinks. She was patted on the back. She was tapped on the shoulder. All night she pivoted, turning a few degrees like a haywire clock to greet each new well-wisher. Everyone wanted a picture with her, wanted to ask her when all this would happen. When would we break through all these unnecessary barriers, they asked. Now that the solution seemed clear and easy enough to execute, no one wanted to wait. A woman a bit older than May, slurring and holding a Manhattan, expressed it best, though unwittingly. How, she asked, spilling her drink but with eyes sharp.
How do we get the inevitable sooner?
May and Francis found themselves at a quieter place down the Embarcadero, where they ordered another round and found themselves joined by a man in his 50s. Uninvited, he sat down with them, holding a large drink in both hands. In seconds, he'd told them he was once a divinity student, was living in Ohio and heading for the priesthood, when he discovered computers. He'd dropped it all and moved to Palo Alto, but had felt removed for 20 years, he said, from the spiritual.
Until now.
I saw your talk today, he said. You connected it all. You found a way to save all the souls. This is what we were doing in the church. We tried to get them all. How to save them all? This has been the work of missionaries for millennia.
He was slurring, but took another long swallow from his drink.
You and yours at the circle?
And here he drew a circle in the air, horizontally, and May thought of a halo.
You're going to save all the souls. You're going to get everyone in one place. You're going to teach them all the same things. There can be one morality, one set of rules. Imagine.
And here he slammed his open palm upon the iron table, rattling his glass.
Now all humans will have the eyes of God. You know this passage. All things are naked and opened unto the eyes of God. Something like that. You know your Bible?
Seeing the blank looks on the faces of May and Francis, he scoffed and took a long pull from his drink.
Now we're all God. Every one of us will soon be able to see and cast judgment upon
every other. We'll see what he sees. We'll articulate his judgment. We'll channel his wrath and deliver his forgiveness on a constant and global level. All religion has been waiting for this. When every human is a direct and immediate messenger of God's will, do you see what I'm saying?
May looked at Francis, who was having little success holding back a laugh. He burst first, and she followed, and they cackled, trying to apologize to him, holding their hands up, begging his forgiveness. But he was having none of it. He stepped away from the table, then swirled back to get his drink, and, now complete, he rambled crookedly down the waterfront. May awoke next to Francis. It was 7 a.m. They'd passed out in her dorm room shortly after 2. She checked her phone, finding 322 new messages. As she was holding it, her eyes bleary, it rang. The caller ID was blocked, and she knew it could only be Calden. She let it go to voicemail. He called a dozen more times throughout the morning. He called while Francis got up, kissed her, and returned to his own room. He called while she was in the shower, while she was dressing. She brushed her hair, adjusted her bracelets, and lifted the lens over her head. And he called again. She ignored the call and opened her messages. There was an array of congratulatory threads from inside and outside the circle, the most intriguing of which was spurred by Bailey himself, who alerted May that circle developers had begun to act on her ideas already. They'd been working through the night in a fever of inspiration, and within a week hoped to prototype a version of May's notions to be used first in the circle, polished there, and later rolled out for use in any nation where circle membership was strong enough to make it practical.
"We're calling it Democracy," Bailey zinged. "It's democracy with your voice and your moxie, and it's coming soon."
That morning, May was invited to the developers' pod, where she found 20 or so exhausted but inspired engineers and designers who apparently already had a beta version of Democracy ready. When May entered, cheers erupted, the lights dimmed, and a single light shone on a woman with long black hair and a face of barely contained joy. "Hello, May. Hello, May's watchers," she said, bowing briefly. "My name is Sharma, and I'm so glad and so honored to be with you today. Today, we'll be demonstrating the very earliest form of Democracy. Normally, we wouldn't move so quickly and so, well, transparently, but given the circle's fervent belief in Democracy and our confidence that it will be adopted quickly and globally, we couldn't see any reason to delay." The wall screen came to life. The word Democracy appeared, rendered in a spirited font and set inside a blue and white striped flag. "The goal is to make sure that everyone who works at the circle can weigh in on issues that affect their lives, mostly on campus, but in the larger world too. So throughout any given day, when the circle needs to take the company's temperature on any given issue, circlers will get a pop-up notice, and they'll be asked to answer the question or questions. The expected turnaround will be speedy and will be essential. And because we care so much about everyone's input, your other messaging systems will freeze temporarily until you answer. Let me show you." On the screen, below the Democracy logo, the question, "Should we have more veggie options at lunch?" was bookended by buttons on either side, yes and no. May nodded.
"Very impressive, guys."
"Thank you," Sharma said. "Now, if you'll indulge us, you have to answer too."
And she invited May to touch either yes or no on the screen.
"Oh,"
May said. She walked up to the screen and pushed yes. The engineers cheered, the developers cheered. On the screen, a happy face appeared, with the words, "You are heard," arcing above. The question disappeared, replaced by the words, "Democracy result. 75% of respondents want more veggie options. More veggie options will be provided." Sharma was beaming.
"See? That's a simulated result, of course. We don't have everyone on Democracy yet, but you get the gist. The question appears, everyone stops briefly what they're doing, responds, and instantly the circle can take appropriate action knowing the full and complete will of the people. Incredible, right?"
"It is," May said.
"Imagine this rolled out nationwide, worldwide."
"It's beyond my capability to imagine."
"But you came up with this,"
Sharma said. May didn't know what to say. Had she invented this? She wasn't sure. She'd connected a few dots. The efficiency and utility of the circle surveys, the constant circle goal of total saturation, the universal hope for a real and unfiltered, and most crucially, complete democracy. Now it was in the hands of the developers, hundreds of them, at the circle, the best in the world. May told them this, that she was just one person who connected a few ideas that stood inches apart, and Sharma and her team beamed and shook her hand, and they all agreed that what had already been done was setting the circle, and possibly all of humanity, on a significant new path. May left the Renaissance and was greeted, just outside the door, by a group of young circlers, all of whom wanted to tell her, all of them on their tiptoes, bursting, that they had never voted before, that they had been utterly uninterested in politics, had felt disconnected entirely from their government, feeling they had no real voice. They told her that by the time their vote, or their name on some petition, was filtered through their local government, and then their state officials, and finally their representatives in Washington, it felt like sending a message in a bottle across a vast and troubled sea. But now, the young circlers said, they felt involved. If democracy worked, they said, then laughed. When democracy is implemented, of course it will work, they said. And when it does, you'll finally have a fully engaged populace. And when you do, the country and the world will hear from the youth, and their inherent idealism and progressivism will upend the planet. This is what May heard all day. As she wandered through the campus, she could barely get from one building to another without being accosted. "We're on the verge of actual change," they said. "Change at the speed that our hearts demand." But throughout the morning, the calls from the blocked number continued. She knew it was Calden, and she knew she wanted no part of him. Talking to him, much less seeing him, would be a significant step back now. By noon, Sharma and her team announced that they were ready for the first actual all-campus democracy tryout. At 12:45, everyone would receive 5 questions, and the results would not only be tabulated immediately, but, the wise men promised, the will of the people would be enacted within the day. May was standing in the center of the campus, amid a few hundred circlers eating lunch, all of them buzzing about the imminent democracy demonstration, and she thought of that painting of the Constitutional Convention, all those men in powdered wigs and waistcoats standing stiffly, all of them wealthy white men who were only passably interested in representing their fellow humans. They were purveyors of an innately flawed kind of democracy, where only the wealthy were elected, where their voices were heard loudest, where they passed their seats in Congress to whatever similarly entitled person they deemed appropriate. There had been some incremental improvements in the system since then, maybe, but democracy would explode it all. Democracy was purer, was the only chance at direct democracy the world had ever known. It was 12:30. And because May was feeling strong and feeling so confident, she finally succumbed and answered her phone, knowing it would be Calden. "Hello," she said. "May," he said, his voice terse. "This is Calden. Don't say my name. I've rigged it so the incoming audio isn't working." "No." "May, please, this is life or death." Calden held a power over her that shamed her. It made her feel weak and pliable. In every other facet of her life, she was in control, but his voice alone dissembled her and opened her to an array of bad decisions. A minute later, she was in the stall, her audio was off, and her phone rang again. "I'm sure someone is tracing this," she said. "No one is. I bought us time. Calden, what do you want? You can't do this. Your mandatory thing and the positive reaction it's gotten, this is the last step toward closing the circle, and that can't happen." "What are you talking about? This is the whole point. If you've been here so long, you know more than anyone that that's been the goal of the circle since the beginning. I mean, it's a circle, stupid. It has to close. It has to be complete." "May, all along, for me at least, this kind of thing was the fear, not the goal. Once it's mandatory to have an account, and once all government services are channeled through the circle, you'll have helped create the world's first tyrannical monopoly. Does it seem like a good idea to you that a private company would control the flow of all information? That participation, at their beck and call, is mandatory?" "You know what Ty said, right?" May heard a loud sigh.
"Maybe." "What did he say?"
"He said the soul of the circle is democratic, that until everyone has equal access, and that access is free, no one is free.
It's on at least a few tiles around campus. May, fine, the circle's good, and whoever invented True You is some kind of evil genius. But now it has to be reined in.